Good morning or evening, friends. Here's your friendly announcer. I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say.
Welcome to the Thank You Rob podcast, episode number 15. Unofficially sponsored by Pearson Salted Nut Roll, made in St. Paul, Minnesota. Not in Mankato, which is where we're at today. Say it again. Don't be a butthole. Eat a Pearson Salted Nut Roll. Make a goofy face. You can check out past episodes of this show at thankyourob.com, where you can also check out my graphic design work, I Define Design, and my other podcast, Some People's Kids Podcast. And while you're at it, you can check out episodes of this podcast on Fuzz Talk Radio at fuzztalkradio.com. Last episode, I had Professor Fresh on, and we talked about coming to America. And this week, I have, or not this week, right now, I got Il Po. Il Po's in the house.
Yeah.
Are you in the house?
Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't get it.
Nah, I don't, but a lot of the jokes that you've had with me have gone over my head. I just smile.
Yeah, thank you. Courtesy smile. Something I forgot to mention about the movie Coming to America when I had Fresh on. Did you know, and you know this because we just talked about it before,
yeah.
The king and queen in Coming to America, James Earl Jones and the lady as the queen, also voiced the Lion King's mother and father in the movie The Lion King. So, that's nice.
Yeah, and I did not know that previous to that. I knew that James Earl Jones was both roles.
James Earl Jones!
Yeah.
I think that's how he says it. James Earl Jones!
James Earl Jones!
So, at some point, the kids will be like, they'll watch The Lion King because that's what they'll know first. And then they'll dig back to Coming to America and be like, that guy's voice sounds like Simba's dad.
Yeah.
And that queen there sounds like Simba's mom.
You realize as soon as the your oldest boy there sees that, he will never stop quoting, "The royal penis is clean, your highness." I still say that to myself when I'm in the shower.
To yourself?
When I get done cleaning my special areas, my nethers, yeah, I say that.
You do?
Sometimes in my head, sometimes out loud, sometimes I scream it.
Nice. You're a fan of the movie then?
Yep, I'm a fan. Yeah. I like it.
Well, today we're going to talk about an album by a gentleman named Stevie Wonder.
Yes.
That album.
Stevelin Morris. I was lying when I said Stevelin Wonderful. It's really Stevelin Morris.
Well, fool me once. The album we're talking about is Songs in the Key of Life, which was released on September 28th, 1976. And I remember that day specifically because I wasn't even born. I don't even know if I was a thought at that point. But
I was thinking about you. I wasn't ready for you yet, but...
Yeah. Son of a bitch.
Bicentennial year.
Il Po is younger than me. Let me just make note of that. So it's not even... That can't happen.
Yeah. No, I would, yeah.
Until time travel exists. I learned a lot about this album in researching it. Because most people assume I just know everything about everything, and... Well, they're wrong.
Yeah.
I'm right.
But it's best to make it appear that way anyways.
Right, yeah. I hate to admit it, but...
Yeah.
First of all, this album was Stevie Wonder's 18th studio album.
Yes.
18. Motherfuckers don't even have 18 albums, you know? Some motherfuckers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is in a time, too, when the recording process was not... Buy yourself a Mac, buy yourself Pro Tools, get yourself a mic. It was, you know.
So that's even more admirable.
A pretty in-depth process, especially when you consider that he was producing not only the music behind it, but the records themselves.
Right.
I mean, he was one of the few artists that wrote the music, wrote the lyrics, produced it.
A true artist.
Yes, indeed. Sir.
Indeed. Well, he wasn't reading books, I'll tell you that.
No. Yeah, and like so I brought the vinyl edition, the first pressing of the record with, and it's got a lyric insert, and I showed our friend Rob here an autograph that they have of Stevie. They made a copy of it, and I mean, you saw it. That just seems mean to me.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's mean. Check it out.
Stevie Wonder is blind, for those that don't know. If you really don't know that, you should not be listening to this show. But
no, you should be listening, because you will know a lot more.
Touche.
In 20 minutes. Yes.
I tell the listeners not to listen. Nope, you tell them to listen.
You should listen. Yeah. Motown, and especially this period, especially in Stevie Wonder, this was a part of three records that are part of his, classic period is what the critics call it.
Okay.
This one, Inner Visions and Superstitions.
Okay.
This is a very important time in American music history.
Right. Yeah, and I did not know that. So that's good to know. And people that listen to the show frequently know that I've said this. I never really listened to classic rock, classic R&B, which you really need to listen to really, if you're a fan of music, you need to know about this shit. You really do. But the beauty of it is you might listen to some new, really shitty music, but you will always, as you grow older, you'll realize this is new, shitty music. I shouldn't be listening to this. I should be listening to real good stuff, like this classic music that was made before you were even born. So Stevie Wonder himself released his first album at age 12 as Little Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, Little Stevie Wonder.
And that was his first album with under Motown, under the sub-label, would you call it?
I know the first one he released was like Fingertips Part 2 or whatever.
Right.
And I don't know if that was Motown or Tamla.
Okay. Tamla.
Yeah.
So this album in particular, Songs in the Key of Life, it's ranked number 56 on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums of All Time. And this was like the big, I'm going to read this verbatim here because it pretty much sums up everything. It's quite a little read, but very important to know about Stevie Wonder and this album. By 1976, Stevie Wonder had become one of the most popular figures in R&B and pop music, not only in the U.S., but worldwide. Okay, within a short space of time, the albums Talking Book, Inner Visions, and Fulfillingness's First Finale were all back-to-back top five successes, and in 1974 and 75, respectively. So that's a lot of albums in a short period of time, to begin with. By the end of 75, Wonder became serious about quitting the music industry altogether. Which I didn't know. I mean, obviously, it wasn't alive. But he wanted to work with handicapped children, which, I mean, that says enough about him as a person to begin with. He had expressed his anger with the way the U.S. government was running the country. Who agrees with that, you know? A farewell concert was being considered to bring down the curtain on his career. Wonder changed his decision when he signed a new contract with Motown in August of 75, thinking he was better off making the best music of his career. At the time, rivals such as Arista and Epic were also interested in him. The contract was laid out as a 7-year, 7-LP, $37 million deal and gave him full artistic control, making this the largest deal made with the recording star up to that point. Almost at the beginning, Stevie took a year off from the music market with a project for a double album to be released around October of 75. It was delayed on short notice when Wonder felt that further remixing was essential, so he was almost like a perfectionist, it seemed like. According to Stevie Wonder, the marketing campaign at Motown decided to take advantage of the delay by producing "We're Almost Finished" t-shirts. I would wear one of those.
Mm-hmm.
People would be like, what the fuck does that mean?
I was almost finished, but, almost finished.
Nice. What are you then?
American.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Work on the new album continued early into early 76. A name was finally chosen for the album, Songs in the Key of Life. The title would represent the formula of a complex key of life and the proposals for indefinite success. The album was finally released on September 28th of 76 after a two-year wait as a double LP album with a 4-track 7-inch EP with it, and a 24-page lyric and credit booklet, including autograph, which you were just talking about. So I had no idea that all of that went into it, that it was such a big deal to begin with, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it took 2 years to make.
Yeah. You know? And I misspoke before. I said Superstitions was name of the record. No, it was Talking Book.
Okay.
Superstitions was one of the singles.
Okay. I didn't catch it either.
So. And I didn't know. I learned something there, too. I did not know that he was so close to a farewell. I knew that he wanted to take some time out to work with handicapped people, but right. I didn't know it was like a career ender for him.
Mm-hmm. So this album featured notable musicians. Herbie Hancock mm-hmm. was one. George Benson, Minnie Riperton, Denise Williams. One thing I noticed when I was reading the credits for the album, that Herbie Hancock contributed hand claps
yeah.
to the song.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that a riot?
And I thought that was pretty good. It was like, so he was leaving the studio. He was like, hey, Stevie, better make sure you give me credit for those hand claps.
Yeah. And Herbie Hancock did not play.
There is no hand clap like a Herbie Hancock
no.
hand clap.
He's definitely got a signature sound.
Those are t-shirts that need to be made. The album, of course, debuted at number one, rave reviews. And that's like, man, for when such an album is highly anticipated like that, the hype overdoes the actual outcome of the album, you know. But
yeah,
it spent 13 consecutive weeks at number one in the U.S. and 11 during 1976, so it was quite successful. And the album had a big impact hip-hop-wise. I always like to make that correlation. Funny, there's a song on the Blue Carpet Treatment by Snoop Dogg that samples a song used in Coming to America that I talked about in the last episode. And on this same album, the Blue Carpet Treatment, there's actually a song with Stevie Wonder, and they sample Conversations.
Ah.
Or the song is called Conversations, I'm sorry, and it reuses the hook, Have a Talk with God.
Uh-huh, yep.
So, that's pretty cool. And then some other hip-hop.
I was going to say, I'm just waiting for you to bring up the big one.
You know, Coolio.
Yeah,
Coolio.
Of course.
And so when I talked to Il Po about doing the show, he was like, you know, I want to talk about this album right here. And I mean, of course, I knew Stevie Wonder from his radio songs.
Yeah.
So I had to buy this album. And listening to the album, this song came on, Pastime Paradise.
Pastime
and I'm like,
Paradise,
what the fuck? Seriously, Coolio?
Yeah.
Pretty much lifted this
whole
song.
Whole thing. Melody, yeah.
Yeah, so, to make Gangsta's Paradise. And I told my wife, and she was like, she doesn't really give a shit about music, but she was pretty blown away by the similarities, you know? So, yeah, Coolio and LV, y'all living in a Gangsta's Paradise. it's pretty, a lot of samples and the melodies were used in Gangsta's Paradise, but... And the last note I really had, I know there's probably more samples used in hip-hop that you might know, but Alicia Keys cites this album to be a big... First of all, Stevie Wonder's a big inspiration to her, and her album Songs in the Key... Songs in A Minor, the title itself was a throwback to Songs in the Key of Life.
I don't know why... Why don't you like Alicia Keys again?
Sorry,
that was too far. That was too far.
Tell me a little bit about this album. Why you like it so much? What's your deal?
Motown in general has been a big influence for me because I dug into my father's record collection when I was young, mm-hmm. Like 11, 12, and he had a pretty decent amount of Motown, and this was one of the first records that I put a needle down on. So that kind of had an effect on me. So it was kind of like that nostalgia purpose, but it's also just an incredibly solid album, and I think Stevie Wonder is probably my favorite solo artist, and this is right up there with, it's hard for me to say which one is my favorite Stevie Wonder album, but this is, you know, it's up there.
Yeah. The only Stevie Wonder album that I own is, like, the number ones album, and that was when I learned that he was playing since he was a kid, you know, because the album starts off with, like, him prepubescent... Little Stevie Wonder.
Yep.
I'm sure it's
that track where he's got that like announcer. Little Stevie Wonder.
Yep,
give
exactly.
it up, folks. Yeah. Yeah. That's everyone. Yeah. That's everyone's first experience with Stevie.
Mm-hmm. I wish I would have been listening to this, you know, since I was a kid. I mean, it's just positive music to begin with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But as an adult listening, it's like. You get songs like Isn't She Lovely, which is, you know, being a parent now, having kids, and hearing that, you're like, it probably takes a different meaning. If I were to hear that as a kid, I'd be like, okay, they got some kids or something in a bathtub and they're singing about it, or...
But with this album and the Motown kind of sound in general is, you know, it's they're not real complex melodies. Mm-hmm. So you can hear it as a kid and it's, you know, isn't she lovely? I mean, mm-hmm. it's almost like a nursery rhyme.
Right.
So, I mean, I was singing that and I was singing these songs and, you know, I didn't not necessarily really knew what they mean.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and like I was talking with Evil Deeds earlier today. We were in the Grey Light studio and... For one, he had no idea about that Coolio sample thing, yeah. So that was like, kind of blew his mind.
Right.
But I lost my train of thought with this. Anyway, so yeah, it was chilling and stuff, Jeremy.
You were saying the meaning of the songs, you were singing them.
Oh yeah, he was saying how listening to these songs as adults, you know, you start to understand the meaning and not just the music side of it. And I mean, he was also a very politically charged artist, you know.
Right.
Him and Marvin Gaye were kind of on the front line of like the political music that was in the popular culture.
Mm-hmm. Was Marvin Gaye a Motown artist?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Was it like anybody who was anybody that had to be a Motown artist to get the credibility, or what? I don't really know much about the Motown days.
Well, Motown was based out of Detroit, obviously, right. And so like. Most things that are on the label are Northern Funk or Soul. Mm-hmm. So they're around that area. But yeah, I mean, there's obviously other big like Stacks down south.
Right.
They're mainly, I mean, it's kind of a regional thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But there was a point where Motown moved out to LA. And then once that happened, it was more of a national thing. They weren't just stuck with Northern Funk or Soul. Okay. But that's also...
What was there a West Coast label before that then? That was
with Motown?
Yeah. Well, no. I mean like a Motown-esque, a Stax-esque.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm sure. I mean, I don't necessarily know it. My focus has always kind of been Northern Soul. Okay. That's what I like.
Do you think in 20 years people are going to be like, well, there was this label called Death Row Records, and they were pretty much West Coast.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We'll be talking about it like that.
Yep.
Oh, and then the East Coast had Bad Boy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I mean that's. That's not just big in hip-hop. That's big in pop culture. I mean, that was a huge thing. People died over that.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And that's crazy. People died.
People die over some Motown versus Stax?
Marvin Gaye certainly did.
Really?
Yeah, his father shot him.
Well, I knew that, but...
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's... Yeah, I don't know if it was over label beef.
Okay, but that's what I was getting at. I mean, yeah.
No.
Yeah. Stax was Otis Redding, right? He was Stax?
Yeah.
I'm a big Otis Redding guy.
Otis Redding is the reason I found all the rest of this. All
right.
Dock of the Bay, which is my favorite song. Mm-hmm. When I heard that, it was, it was just
it's
like,
over.
You know, a whole world opened up to me. Because it was like nothing but Guns N' Roses and like Huey Lewis in the news and, you know, like that stuff. And I was just like, oh my gosh.
That right, sir. That's a pretty broad range between Huey Lewis.
And fortunately, my mother and my father were both big music fans. Mm-hmm. And my mother was really into like doo-wop and she was into soul. My dad was into like classic rock, but also like blues and Motown. So
right.
They were kind of diverse themselves.
You know, what's funny is as an adult, I inherited my dad's, well, my parents' record collection, but it didn't, I just didn't have any interest in when I was a kid.
Yeah.
My dad had this, album of TV show intros. One of them was the Batman theme song. That was the only album I knew he had. Because that's the only one I cared about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, so I got his record player and his albums, and I've started my own collection on top of that, but his was all pretty much classic rock.
Yeah.
But in that same vein, he had a collection of Cher albums, right?
Yeah.
And Cher was like a pop star at the time that he had some fascination with. Do you see some correlation there? I have some fascination with Alicia Keys.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. And I had no idea. I'm like, why are all these Sonny and Cher and Cher albums in here? He's like, oh, I went through a little phase.
I went through a little phase. Yeah. Well, I was really down with white women that were trying to look Native American.
But yeah, and he had some CCR. It was more classic rock. There was no real soul music. That would explain why I didn't really hear it until later in life. But
yeah. Well, and when I lived out west, too, I was the... soul or the urban music expert was my title because I worked at a record store, and so it was kind of my job to learn as much as I could about these
Amoeba
records.
Records?
Nope. Nope.
That was the competition?
That was the competition. Rasputin Records.
Rasputin,
another independent record store. Right. But so yeah, so I got to dig into a lot of these albums even more. So yeah. It was like perfect for me, you know.
Right. What are any standout tracks in here that you really like? You love even? Are you falling in like with them or falling out of love with them?
These are songs that I love. I'm definitely like, I would marry these. I would take them home to meet my mother. All that. Nice. I will buy them din din.
It's not just take them out and maybe I'll get a little BJ out of this.
No.
Or an HJ or a Z.
Love in Need of Love Today. Mm-hmm. That's the one that opens up the record. That's just an amazing song. And I had actually, you know, like I said, I heard this when I was young, but I got really into R&B when I was like in high school, mm-hmm. like Blackstreet. Loved Blackstreet. Right. Not Backstreet.
Blackstreet. Yep.
But they did a cover of that song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of made me like go back again. But that one's huge. Pastime Paradise, obviously. Although now I got to admit that I hear that and I hear Coolio.
Right.
It doesn't matter how many times. And I've listened to this version probably a lot more than I listened to that. But that was so ingrained in my like early 90s experience that I can't not think about it.
As I walk through the valley in the shadow of death.
Joy Inside My Tears. That's a really beautiful song.
Black Man.
Yeah, that's actually a really good song. What's kind of cool about that, too, is at the end of it, they have, like, this minute-long thing where they list off, like, first man on the moon was a white man. The first, you know, like, they listed off all these, like, historical achievements and the nationality of the person that discovered them. And, you know, it was mainly yellow man, black man. So that was kind of cool about
paying
that.
Heritage to accomplishments of human beings.
Of human beings, yes.
Not just skin color.
Yeah, Stevie was definitely an artist that was about community, bringing people together. Mm. But, yeah, I mean, you can listen to this all the way through. It's solid all the way through. I mean, there's some stuff where he hits the synth really hard, and that is a slight turnoff for me.
I know what you mean. I listened to it on the way here.
Yeah, but I mean, even that, he was such a virtuoso that you can still find merit in that, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not totally overdone. I mean, he produced it very well. But if there was one thing I did not like about the album, it would be that.
Yeah.
I would rather saw him on, like, a Rhodes piano or something.
No, I think somewhere along the way I was reading about the album, he had... Where was the album recorded at? What studio?
I'll have to look up that one. I don't know.
But I believe the story was he checked... You know, he basically booked studio time to work on a song or something for this album to get started, and he booked like maybe a 3-day session, and then he ended up staying for like 9 months or something like that.
So it looks like the Hit Factory, it's a huge studio out in New York.
Right.
But then also the Record Plant in L.A., which is another big one.
I think that might have been the one that was mentioned.
Yeah.
But the album is a hit, so it makes sense that it was recorded there.
Yeah, so it looks like it was recorded those two places, and it doesn't say which one's recorded where, so I don't see where it was recorded more, but I would assume if it wasn't being recorded in Michigan that probably most of it was recorded in L.A.,
right.
I would guess.
Right. It's a classic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Does it give you an erection?
No.
Okay.
No.
Does it make you flaccid?
I mean, I'm getting old. There ain't much that doesn't make me flaccid.
Right. Right.
Right.
All right, we're going to take a break here unless you have something to add quick.
No. Just check it out. It's awesome.
Yeah. Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back in just a minute.
First saved message.
Yeah, buddy. Guess what Master got herself yesterday? She picked it out herself and I gave her... And yeah, give us it all. I just want... part of the store and let her buy the whole thing by herself. And she got what she wanted that way. You can't blame me for it. Anyway, call up and we'll tell you about it. Got a brand new Dell computer. Laptop. Bye.
Alright, we're back. We're back up in this bitch. Il Po, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Just something to ponder about. Let's. If you were stranded on death row, mm-hmm. with the Death Row Records inmates, you got Snoop. These are just kind of the general ones. I'm not talking like these little sub people that they did one song. Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, Suge Knight, Daz, Corrupt, Lady of Rage, Tupac. You're stranded on death row, and you get to pick any one of them to be cellmates with. Who's it going to be?
Tupac.
That's it?
I mean, I'm sure you want a better answer, but I don't even know who some of those other people are.
You don't know who Snoop Dogg is?
I know Snoop. I know him as Snoop Lion.
Oh.
But, no, actually, I know who all those people are, but I was not a Death Row fan.
Right.
That was not my thing. Except for Tupac. I enjoyed Tupac.
Right.
Dre, I like N.W.A., so I like Dre, but... No, of course, that's an easy one, man. If Lady of Rage was cuter, you know, but I'm pretty sure she would not be kind to me.
You know,
would rage. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I bet if you grew your hair out, she'd give you some nice Afro puffs.
Yeah, oh man.
There you go.
In the seventh grade, I was a punk rock kid.
Mm-hmm.
I had very long hair.
Okay.
For St. Patrick's Day, I think I might have some. And actually, I was trying to find this picture that I'm going to describe to you right now, but okay. I have not found it yet.
Right.
So I had someone braid all my hair,
mm-hmm.
and then I like...
Braid
did that
hair,
spray, did like spray green thing for St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I had like I had long braided hair. I can swear, right?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. So I had long ass braided hair. But when I lit it out, I looked like a dude from Crisscross. It was like.
Mac Daddy or Danny Mac? Which
oh man,
one?
Both. Inside out, wiggity, wiggity, wiggity. Yeah.
So you're going Lady of Rage.
Yep.
So she could braid your hair.
No, Tupac, man. That ain't even quite. Okay. Dude, don't try and pull.
You got to throw this because you got to think about this. Now, yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. You know, if she was one of the options, you know, you're on death row, man.
Yeah,
dead.
Okay. So here's the thing. If I really thought that Lady of Rage would be of some kind of economic value to me, then I would say that.
In the pen?
You think I'm going to be able to sell her? She would be selling me.
Right.
I think with Tupac, I could at least reason with him, be like, hey, don't sell me to these guys.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be worried about Lady of Rage making you her bitch, but, you know, Suge Knight absolutely would. You would be his bitch. He would be fucking you in the ass a lot. You would be crying yourself to sleep pretty much every night.
That's because he thinks all white people are Rob Van Winkle.
Say it, Ice Ice Baby. Say it.
Fortunately, I guess there is. There are some of those penitentiaries do have balconies.
I initially went with Tupac too because yeah. Pac's been locked up before. He knows people.
Yeah.
He knows how it works, and I don't know his physical what he was like because I've never seen him or met him.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure I could take him.
Who?
Pac.
Tupac.
Yeah. What do you think?
Have you seen that hologram? That hologram was cut.
Okay, dude. Here's the thing. If I was locked up for the rest of my life, I'm gonna work out. I'm gonna get beefed up.
Okay, right? So this is under the premise that you're like, it's not like you're just planted on death row, like you've been there.
Right. No. No.
You spend like 20 years getting hard. Oh man, I don't care. You pull me with then.
Okay. That's why I almost would say rage because you're gonna have needs. Okay. Either you're gonna get fucked or you're gonna do some fucking. Okay, it doesn't matter. I don't care if you have any inkling to be gay or not. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but you're going to get lonely, okay?
Yeah, I think you're going to get lonely, but I think you're not giving humans enough credit that we can't suppress certain urges. Right. I mean, that's definitely a basic human instinct,
mm-hmm.
but
I guess you know,
I can't speak for the
can't speak for the inmates because I've never been one.
I mean, I like fucking. It's like the most favoritest thing that I do.
We be fucking.
And most of the things that I do in my life is to try to have sex. But with that said, if I was stuck in a place for 20, you know, for the rest of my life,
yeah.
I think conversation would be more important to me than
right.
sexual release. And I would get a lot better conversation out of Tupac than any of them other dudes. Right. And I mean, Dr. Dre, he would just have someone else write his conversations for him. So
nice. All right, so you're going Pac.
Pac, I mean, yeah. I know I should have had something funnier, but that's...
No, this is real shit right
That's
here.
Real. That's gravy.
You can't be walking down the streets and people ask you these questions. This is journalism.
This is hard-hitting facts.
Yeah.
Ain't no puff piece.
Well, all right, let's get on to the interview here then. We're here with Il Po, the notorious P.O.E.
Yeah.
What are you, Wu-Tang affiliate or... Something like that?
Gray Light, baby.
Oh, Gray Light. I'm sorry. Yeah. Wu-Tang Gray Light. I get those confused a lot.
Yeah.
So, when did you start rapping? At what age?
Well, I guess it kind of depends on what you mean, but, like, the first time I ever did a show was, like, 2002.
Okay.
But, I mean, of course, like, before you do your first show, you've been rapping in your room for 5 years, and, right. You know. I actually recorded my first rap when I was 10 years old.
Wow.
Yep. I can't find a copy of it, but it was called Kicking It with Connie Chung. And it was all about Connie Chung and Maury Povich.
This sounds like one of the questions I should have in place of who we'd be death row inmates with. Would you kick it with Connie Chung?
Yeah.
No?
No.
Maybe back in the day, though, when you're 10.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You don't know any better.
I don't know any better.
Yeah.
Yeah. She would just would have been another stranger to me that I shouldn't be taking candy from.
So it was actually about Connie Chung, the rap, or what?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like I was a super down 10-year-old where I knew a lot about, like, news anchors and stuff, but I had an older cousin. Mm-hmm. He was, like, 3 years older than me, and he wrote it with me. So I wrote about a person, Connie Chung, who all I knew was
she
was apparently Chinese or Japanese.
Of Asian descent.
She was of Asian descent.
Okay.
And that's what my 10-year-old rap was about.
Right. So it was ghostwritten, or did your cousin write it?
No, I wrote it. I wrote it.
I thought you just said your cousin.
He was, like, the one who came up with the topic.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying, I didn't know who Connie Chung was.
Was your cousin older or younger?
Older.
Okay. He was like, I'm going to get
Have you been paying attention?
What do you mean?
He's 3 years older than me. I said this. We've been over here. Rob.
Who's doing the interview here? I just asked the questions.
Sure.
I don't need to pay attention to the answers.
You know, yeah, he was older than me, so yeah.
So you wrote this rock song when you were 12.
It was a rap.
You said.
It was a rap.
Rap?
And yeah.
You were 13?
No, 10.
10. Okay.
My cousin was 13.
Okay, so your younger cousin wrote a rap song. You sang it.
I am going to stab you.
Okay, so you wrote that. Anyways.
Yeah, anyway, yeah.
Your
so
first performance. Do you remember your first performance then in 02?
Well, okay, yeah. The first time I was ever, like, on stage in front of people and was responsible for entertaining, I wasn't really rapping. I was hosting a show.
Mm-hmm.
My first time, like, excuse me. My first time performing was actually with Professor Fresh's band, Psychosynthetic, at Choppers.
Right.
And there was this local studio in town that was doing sound, and they were kind of trying to promo themselves. Well, I was going on before Psychosynthetic, and they kept checking Psychosynthetic's instrumentals as I was playing.
Wow.
So my first performance, I did like a song and a half and walked away incredibly mad.
And then you had this it was just boiling inside you. I fucking hate these Psychosynthetic guys.
No, actually, no. Al was really cool about it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But Sam was a dick about it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was.
That's your run
just
of the mill.
Just kidding. I love you, Sam.
Yeah.
I love you, Sam.
Yeah. Sam Andrew Miller.
Yeah. No, it wasn't like anything vindictive with the sound people. They were doing something new, and mm-hmm. they were trying to multitask.
Right.
You've got to mute certain lines.
Maybe we could get a little input from Fresh, who happens to be right here.
I don't remember it.
He doesn't remember it. Never mind. So after that, it was just, you're like, did you give it a second chance, same place, or where'd you move from there?
Yeah, well, I mean, when Professor Fresh and I started in this town, there you didn't have a whole ton of options.
Right.
It was house parties or, you know, like Choppers would let you go in there, you know, underneath the Legions and stuff.
Okay.
But I mean, yeah, so you just kind of, there's no
Choppers
pull to
or
have.
The What's Up?
Choppers. The What's Up, like, well, there was a Chopper, or What's Up had the open mics that kind of everyone from multiple genres kind of communicated
okay.
with.
Okay.
And yeah. Huh.
And when did the What's Up really, because in my experience, when I first started coming down to Mankato with Lyrical Pedestrians and Psychosynthetic playing, was the What's Up was like the first place we played out here, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know that they didn't even do anything before that.
Well, yeah, I mean,
hip hop wise, I should say.
Yeah, not until Psychosynthetic showed that there could be a fan base that came through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, that was almost strictly like a rock club.
Right. The rock's up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say funny shit like that all the time, Nate. All the time.
Now you got me thinking. I wonder if my first time was at one of those open mics. Either way, yeah, I guess so. I don't remember my first performance.
So you rip on me, not paying attention to the answers, and you can't even answer them right.
You may be the interviewer, but I'm the star, baby.
So when was your first album? I know you used to put out like a little mixtapes, yeah. But just you burn CDs and that's how I first heard of you, I believe. Maybe come down here.
Yeah. At shows I would put out burn discs at every table that mm-hmm. or wherever I could, you know, at every show I did. My first real album, I did those for a while, you know, but then A Hard Night's Day was my first one.
Okay.
And that was all produced by Shoba.
And who is Shoba?
DJ Shoba. Exclusive talent.
Is he your mentor?
I don't know. He's my homie. He's a DJ producer, the DJ in Grey Light. He's like, he's my co-cap.
That's your guy. Yeah. What about Fresh?
He's all right.
So no, at some point, did you go to school with Fresh? And
yeah. I mean, with Al and I mean, we definitely have a close musical bond, but that's like kind of the icing on the cake. I mean, we've been friends since long before either one of us were rapping. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, it's kind of a brotherly relationship.
Right. Brotherly love.
Yep.
Yeah, bro.
Brotherly relationship. Let's keep it that way. No, good. It's all love. I don't want anyone thinking that my sarcasm is real.
Sarcasm is real. I just want you to know that.
It's thick.
Yeah, real thick. Just like my ladies.
Yeah.
When did Grey Light get started, and who was the founding fathers or mothers?
The founding fathers were actually myself and Chevy.
Okay.
Yeah. I can never pronounce his last name correctly, so I don't ever do it. John
Chevalier?
Is that how you really say it?
I don't know.
Chevalier. Okay, good. That's closer to how I really pronounce it.
But we can
it.
Call it Chevalier. It sounds fancy.
Because that is fancy.
Yeah.
You hear that? That is fancy. But yeah, actually, him and I, he was kind of helping me do design stuff and just kind of helped me with internet presence because I didn't know much about that.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed kind of a name to go under. We were going under Hype Poe for a while, and I had this whole kind of theory about trying to find the balance and everything between the black and the white, so it was all about gray, everything was gray.
Mm-hmm.
So then Project Grey Light was kind of the name of that,
right?
And then Shoba came on, and then that was kind of our band name with him and I, was
Project
Grey Light.
Project Grey Light or Grey Light?
The project got dropped kind of quick.
All right.
Yeah, so then it was just Shoba and I, and now it's more of a crew than a band. It's kind of when we all come together.
I remember, I've known Nate here for a while, but at one point you wanted to go by Radio Face.
Yeah.
What happened there? Give him a little backstory of Radio Face.
Oh, Radio Face. Well, it was just kind of something ill, I thought, you know? Like, I got a face made for radio, voice made for books. Although, as you can hear, my voice is sexy and my face is not too far off of that. I don't know.
You know,
it's just kind of something.
He is a handsome man. Don't let him fool you.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know. It was just kind of like, and I mean, I still kind of wrestle with that. Like, you just kind of want to like rebrand yourself, you know? Right. Like, oh, I got a new style. I'm so much better than I was before. I just want to come out with something new. But ultimately, I'd already been going by Ilpo. I'll never get rid of it.
So Ilpo, where did the name come about?
Started off Ill Poetic, but the POE was always an acronym for Prisoner of Earth. But then there was another MC in Ohio that went by Ill Poetic, and he had a pretty good following, and he had a connection with Rhymesayers through Blueprint. So then I shortened my name.
Right. I remember that now.
Yeah. And every once in a while, I still get emails for him in my Gmail account. Just forward
and
them
then
on.
You do?
Yeah.
I, once in a while, you gotta be like, someone's looking for a feature, so you just do it.
Well, yeah, one was like, someone was trying to get him to perform at like some place in Canada, and I'm like, I've never played Canada. I wonder how far I can go.
$5,000 guarantee. I'll be there.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's from Ohio. It ain't like that's walking distance for him. You know, right. He's got to have some kind of rider I could be biting off of.
Yeah. Well, you're a good man for not doing that.
Yeah, whatever.
PayPal you the money. They wouldn't know.
Yeah, right.
Canadians are too nice. You don't want to do that to them anyways.
Yep.
Yeah. They'd apologize to you for mistakenly sending you that.
Oh, sorry, buddy.
So what projects are you involved in right now? What do you got going on?
I'm actually spending most of my time working on other people's things. I've just finished mastering a couple albums. The last one being Phenom. It's a young guy in town here that's coming out. Northern Versatility was the name of the album, and I mastered that. I'm doing a lot of stuff with Evil Deeds. Just kind of getting him going again.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are Evil Deeds done dirt cheap?
Sure.
All right, sure.
I don't know. I have no response to that.
Evil Deeds was formerly known as...
Cause and Effect.
Cause and Effect, yeah. Who was kind of your hype man for a while, right?
I was his hype man starting out.
Oh.
Yeah, that's actually, that's kind of where I said, my first performance was entertaining, but not necessarily rapping, because it was hyping for him.
Right.
And
then at one point did that turn around? Because I never knew him as you being his hype man. I always knew him as...
Yeah.
Being yours.
No, when you kind of met me, he was already, kind of taking a back seat with rapping, and he was just, doing features on my set. Mm-hmm. And then he had a kid, and then he was, kind of completely out of it, but now his son is old enough where he can get out of the house and start doing some of that stuff again. So.
Right.
Yeah, so now I'm back to hyping him mainly. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you're building him up. You're his protege now. No,
he I'm sorry, would he's, be my he's protege. Yours.
That's what I meant to say.
Prodigy or protege?
Whatever.
Cool.
Tomato, yeah. Tomato.
But right? I mean, I'm still doing solo sets, super stoked
Prodigy.
About...
Prodigy. Okay.
I'm gonna wait for house music to start. Doom, 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 doom,
doom, doom, doom. Smack my bitch up. That was Prodigy.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
I know of the group or whatever.
The Prodigy, the person. Though. Yeah.
But I don't know any music.
That's my derailing in the conversation.
Sweet.
Did it work?
Yeah. Yeah. But no. So as far as future stuff, I'm not 100% sure what I'm going to do next.
You don't know what the future holds?
It definitely holds me making some more music. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure right now if I'm going to have it be a hip-hop album or if I'm going to do live instrumentation. I'm also
because you've dabbled in that, right?
Yeah, well, I'm in a band called Mac Morris.
Okay, I didn't know you guys were still doing stuff.
Yeah, we're about as inactive as an active band can be.
Mm-hmm.
The lead singer is...
Dead?
No, he's in jail right now.
Oh, well, I might as
so we got to wait for him to get out, and then we'll start doing shows again as that. And we have basically an EP ready that's... I really enjoy it. It's...
You know, normally
I
don't have a lot of experience with being in groups where members are locked up.
Yeah.
But I would imagine it probably complicates things as far as recording.
Yep.
I mean, you can still promote.
Yeah, we don't really. He's been promoting a solo album that he's doing.
In jail?
Yeah, well, he gets work release.
Oh, okay.
And he is about the most...
So this isn't just he's not on death row.
No. He gets work released, so during that time, he's on the Twitter and stuff mm-hmm. like that and doing his thing.
So you got the Mac Morris project.
Yep.
That's on the back burner. Would you say it's simmering?
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm working on it. I'm doing, I do all the recording and engineering for it, so I'm still kind of doing that. And I'm trying to get everything ready for when he comes out, then he'll come in and we'll fix a few things and release it.
I think the name of the band is awesome.
Thank
you. A good play on Zach Morris.
Yes.
Is the Evil Deeds the next Greylight project? Or what is the next?
I've been kind of messing around a little bit, and I kind of almost got enough for an EP that I might just put out because I don't want to wait for, and I'm not trying to build up an album's worth of songs. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of making songs and put them out as they're done. I'll probably release something before that Evil Deeds record gets done. But the next big project will be that Evil Deeds album.
And are you on that album at all? You're on or that album?
Yeah. One of my beats and... I got two verses on there.
And you're on the new Professor Fresh?
I think so.
I think you made the cut.
I think so.
I think you made it.
There are some beat issues that the professor's got to work out. But, I mean, I'll do whatever he tells me.
Okay. He'll be on it no matter what.
Boom. There you go.
Yep.
I don't ever want to just assume.
Right.
Because you know what happens when you assume, Rob?
No, what?
Bad things.
Okay. I don't want to do that. So you're still doing features, though, even though you're working on these other things.
Yeah, I actually wish projects. I could do more. I really dig doing features. I don't charge for features. My only stipulation is I'm not going to do a mixtape track.
What if it was a really shitty rapper? Would you still do it?
It would depend. It would depend on how the person came at me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to make bad music. See, that's my thing. Is like, I just want to put out good art. You know what I mean? That doesn't seem like it should be such a foreign thought.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know. It would depend. Like, I mean, if I thought it was someone who was like trying to build and like get better, and it would be like kind of a cool thing for him,
and you saw potential, you'd do it.
Yeah.
Give him a shot. Come on, people start. You know, I'm sure you weren't mind blowing when you started, and you're still working on that. You're still, you know, very mediocre. I'm just kidding.
Cute.
Yeah, kidding.
No, but yeah, I mean, in that situation, if the person was like just whack and came at me like all salty, I wouldn't. But
right.
Other than that, yeah.
Right. Under the right circumstances, you would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my verse is still going to be banging.
Right. Hey, that's a good way to look at it. You're like, you are shitty, but I'm going to outshine you, so let's do it.
Yeah.
I just
ain't trying to do like mixtape tracks for people because my verses, I put a lot of work into them. And...
Right. So if one were interested, how would one get a hold of you?
Here, I'll just give you Professor Fresh's home address. And then, no, Facebook, facebook.com/ILLPOE. That's the best way to get a hold of me. You can go to illpoe.com, which is ILLPOE.com. And that's got links to every place you can get you could possibly contact me. Yeah, that's them's the places.
You don't want to give out your phone number?
Nah.
You know, you could give out your old phone number, which I tried to call you at. Some girl answered. Or she didn't answer. I got her voicemail.
Was she sexy? Did she sound
she
sexy?
She sounded cute.
She sounded DTF?
DTF.
Down to food. That's horrible. I really try not to be misogynistic, ladies. But hey, I want to go back on the feature thing, man. People, MCs listening, man. Check my stuff out. If you like me, man. Just do songs. I'm just trying to put good stuff out there. I ain't trying to make money off of this, at least not right now.
But if you're shitty, just review process just to make sure everything checks out there.
Yeah.
All right, well, Nate, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah. Check out Vanguard. Go to Bandcamp, my Bandcamp, and get Vanguard.
We didn't even mention that.
Yeah.
Shit, there's a whole other album there.
Yeah.
Vanguard.
Yeah. I just so happened to take a breaker after I put it out because school and stuff, and I was very frustrated. But yeah, Vanguard. I produced it all myself. I'm madly in love with it. I think it's dope. All the features on there are from Mankato. Professor Fresh and I have a really dope song on there called To the Moon, comma, Man. It's ill. Check it out.
Bandcamp.
Graylight.bandcamp.com.
Very good. Thank you for being on the show. Any last words there?
Thank you, Rob.
Oh, that's thank you.
That would be it. That seems to be the thing to say, right?
You gotta say it, yeah.
No, thank you very much. It was nice seeing you again, of course.
Yeah,
and
always.
I enjoy listening to these, so I'm glad I got to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Well, you can check out thankyourob.com again for past episodes. You can listen to the last episode with Professor Fresh or someone else that I've interviewed that you don't know about, but you should listen because they're sometimes entertaining and insightful. They can be. Thank you, Rob Podcast. I Define Design for my graphic design work. Some People's Kids Podcast, which is a comedy podcast I do with my good friend Chuck. It's entertainment-based, movie, music, TV shows, other stuff. But thanks for listening. And remember this, don't forget.